I'm WBJC's Interim General Manager, Jonathan Polevsky. The end of June marks the end of our fiscal year, and I'd like to thank everyone who pledged during this time to support WBJC and everyone who listened, and I thought it might be a nice way to say thank you by highlighting the life and works of a different composer each day until June 30th, and that is what we have done. Lo, these now 29 days. Welcome to the penultimate 30 and 30. By the way, if you didn't make a pledge, you can still be a part of our fundraising efforts this fiscal year by going to WBJC.com. I also want to thank everyone who wrote such nice things about the series and my fellow colleagues who have contributed to it. He was born during the reign of Alexander III and died the same day as Joseph Stalin. He began his career as an enfant terrible, musical terrorist, and ended it as a loyal Soviet citizen composer. In addition to being one of the great composers of the past century, he was an excellent pianist, a conductor of some skill, and a fine chess player. He was a cosmopolitan, having grown up in St. Petersburg, then the capital of the Russian Empire, and lived in New York as well as Paris. For the last 18 years of his life, he left the West and returned to the Workers' Paradise, aka the Soviet Union, for reasons that are still discussed and debated to this very day. His name was Sergei Sergeyevich Prokofiev. Born in 1891, there would have been little reason to believe that the Russian Empire would collapse less than two decades later. Prokofiev grew up in St. Petersburg and was an impressive child prodigy. His keyboard and composition skills soon earned him the respect of those who were significantly older. He lacked neither skills nor humility and was soon winning prizes at the conservatory reserved for older students. When he competed for the Rubinstein Prize in 1914, Prokofiev had the chutzpah to play his own piano concerto rather than that of an established master. Even more galling to his fellow competitors, he won. After graduating from the St. Petersburg Conservatory with numerous degrees, Prokofiev realized that the post-revolutionary world of the emerging Soviet Union was not the best place for a young composer. In 1918, he asked Anatoly Lunacharsky, the People's Commissar of Education, for permission to leave Russia for the United States. Fortunately, Lunacharsky agreed, saying, "You are a revolutionary in music. We are revolutionaries in life. We ought to work together. But if you want to go to America, I shall not stand in your way." Sadly for Prokofiev, he never really adjusted to nor enjoyed life in America. He could never hope to pianistically outplay Rachmaninoff or outcompose Stravinsky. For American audiences, he was just another talented Russian who had escaped the revolution, and there were rather a lot of them. He left for Paris in April of 1920. For the next 16 years, he lived a fruitful, chaotic, but ultimately frustrating life in the West. He was always competing for attention with rival performers and instrumentalists, and there was the constant struggle to earn enough money to be comfortable. Prokofiev, once the radical composer, was now, for Paris in the 1920s, a conservative composer. During these years, the nascent Soviet Union invited him back to the motherland for lavish and extensive tours. He was well paid and fussed over. While Prokofiev was one of many in the West, in the Soviet Union, he was a star. The regime wanted him back and did their best to seduce him. In 1936, it worked. Prokofiev and his family returned to the Rodina. Whether Prokofiev was naive, desperate, or careerist, he was back. In his first years as a Soviet citizen, he contributed many masterworks to the national canon: Peter and the Wolf, the ballet Romeo and Juliet, and the exquisite score to the Eisenstein propaganda film masterpiece Alexander Nevsky. When the Germans invaded Russia on June 22, 1941, Prokofiev was hard at work on an opera based on Tolstoy's War and Peace. He was evacuated from Moscow to the Caucasus and composed a very fine violin sonata and his second string quartet. Other wartime projects included more collaboration with director Sergei Eisenstein on the film Ivan the Terrible, Parts 1 and 2. It was, however, his fifth symphony, written during the summer of 1944, which defined Prokofiev during the war years and made him the most important composer in the Soviet Union. Prokofiev's fame reached its peak with a symphony's premiere on January 13, 1945. Also heard that night were the composer's classical symphony, his Symphony No. 1, and Peter and the Wolf. A few days later, Prokofiev lost consciousness and suffered a concussion as a result of falling down a flight of stairs. He was diagnosed with chronic high blood pressure. In the days before bypass surgery and angioplasty, there was little that could be done other than restrict his behavior. Once a man of incredible vitality, he was now reduced to an invalid lifestyle. Hoping to preserve his health, his doctors limited his activities severely. Drinking, driving, chess playing, travel, stimulating conversation, and smoking were all forbidden. When the war ended in the spring of 1945, Prokofiev left Moscow for the government composer's retreat colony at Ivanovna. He had already started work on the Sixth Symphony, but was forced to abandon it by his physicians. He eventually returned to work in spite of severe headaches and other symptoms. Fellow Soviet composer Dmitry Kabalevsky remembers. Prokofiev did not give up, did not lose his optimism, his joy of life, his courage and youthful cheerfulness, and a phenomenal capacity for concentration on his work, his whole existence. All his energies, his entire mode of life were directed to one aim of saving for his works all of the strength he had left. At times, it seemed as if he knew that his malady would defeat him in the end and was deliberately hurrying to get all his ideas down on paper before it was too late. Prokofiev died on March 5, 1953, age 61. News of his passing was completely obliterated by the death of Comrade Stalin that same day. There was little mourning for the great Soviet composer, and his funeral was attended by a mere 30 people. When Prokofiev's death was reported in a Russian musical journal, it was printed on page 116, the first 115 pages being occupied by the death of the great leader, Comrade Stalin. Let's close with the words of fellow Soviet composer Dmitri Shostakovich, who did attend Prokofiev's funeral, about his colleague. I wish you at least another 100 years to live and create. Listening to such works as your Seventh Symphony makes it much easier and much more joyful to live. I'm WBJC's Jonathan Polevsky. Thank you so much for listening to today's 30 and 30, our penultimate program. If you'd like to contribute to WBJC's musical efforts, and why wouldn't you, you can go to WBJC.com.